From the sports desk of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal and RedRaiders.com, here's your look at all things Texas Tech sports. Now, here's the Red Raider Podcast.
Well, hello again, everybody, and welcome to another weekly edition of the Red Raiders Podcast, brought to you by Lubbock Avalanche Journal Sports Department. I'm Texas Tech beat writer Don Williams from AJ Media, and joined as always by AJ Media sports editor Carlos Silva Jr. talking Texas Tech football. Red Raiders on a swing through the Midwest last Saturday, losing at Kansas State 31-21 after leading with 11 minutes to go in that game. This Saturday, getting ready to take on Iowa State, 2:30 p.m. kickoff at Jack Trice Stadium in Ames. And since it's early fall, not late fall, looks like it's going to be pretty good weather up in Ames on Saturday. Nice football weather with the temperature in the 60s. So the elements should not really be a factor. It'll be can Texas Tech stop Brock Purdy and the Cyclones, which Red Raiders have not been able to do the last couple of years. Last year in Lubbock, Iowa State winning 34-24, and last trip to Ames, it was Iowa State 40-31. But Carlos, before we get into Iowa State, we'll talk a little bit, recap a little bit Texas Tech and Kansas State from last Saturday. You were up there. I was watching on television. We saw
which is a totally different dynamic for us, ain't it?
Yeah, kind of the opposite. You're using some connections in Manhattan to save the company some money. So, you and I both saw the Red Raiders play badly in the first half at Kansas State, and then rally ahead early in the fourth quarter, and then it's the Texas Tech bugaboo that we've seen for the last couple of years now, just cannot finish games, and they couldn't finish again on Saturday, this past Saturday, Carlos.
Absolutely, but I think the one thing that you can take away is, I know everyone's going to look at the loss, but I think, again, you look at this game, Don, there are positives you can take away from it. Once again, Texas Tech has the talent to play in Big 12 games. They have the talent to make comebacks. I think the biggest thing that you can look at, and you had the stat in one of your stories, I can't remember which one it was, or I remember you brought it up to me, but Texas Tech, you cannot be held scoreless in the first half and expect to win a bunch of Big 12 games where, as you've mentioned before, Don, you can't give up or you can't take field goals. You got to make touchdowns. And
now they can't even take field goals when they're there.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, excuse me, Trey Wolf 0-for-3. Missed a couple of field goals there where I know I can't remember if it was post game or our Monday Zoom press with Matt Wells, but he felt like if you make those two, it's maybe 7-6 going into halftime, and you don't know how things kind of turn at that point. But I think biggest thing for Texas Tech, man, I hate to say this, but I mean, they didn't look crisp for the first time, because usually on your first offensive drive, you usually have some scripted plays. They didn't look very good. Alan Bowman didn't look very good. And then, unfortunately, I think this is going to be kind of the big key storyline going into this contest is, will Alan Bowman start, or will Henry Columbia, the Utah State grad transfer, will he get his first start after playing very well in that second half? I mean, that's one thing that people forget is that he's played a lot of college football, not a lot, but he's played enough to where he's obviously got good acumen of the Utah State offense that now David Yost and Matt Wells implement here at Texas Tech. The verbiage is maybe a little bit different, but certainly you saw once he slowed down his pace, didn't just kind of tuck the football and run, he was able to stay in the pocket, find his progressions, found Miles Price, who is, again, you and I have been talking about it. He's going to probably be featured more in the offense because of his speed and just his elusiveness. But I think the important thing to kind of figure out right now is just that he is just a very talented quarterback, and something that maybe Texas Tech hasn't had in a while, which is a capable backup to where you can kind of let Allen kind of come back when he needs to with that ankle injury.
Well, and I was going to say, Matt Wells made it real clear on Monday, said Alan Bowman is the starter. He earned the job, and when he's healthy, he will be back out there. So, in his mind, there's no debate who the number one is, and I think that's justified, regardless of what the Alan Bowman detractors want to say. Bottom line, he went into the game last week leading the Big 12 in passing, number five in the FBS in passing.
Yeah, by a lot, by the way. People forget he came in with about 1,000 yards, and the next guy after him was about 688, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he has been passing very well.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I understand why people have been critical of him, obviously. I mean, thrown some interceptions. He's missed some open receivers that could have been touchdowns. He's not looked super sharp, having not played the last 9 games last year. But he will be the guy when he is ready. Now, the question for this week is, can he be ready this week? I don't think he will be. Sprain the ankle. That's not something that's going to get, that you're probably going to get over in 24 to 48 hours. And here's the thing to know, teams generally, when you're getting ready to play a football game on Saturday, you have basically two days to get your heavy preparation in. And for Texas Tech, those days are Tuesday and Wednesday. So if Alan Bowman was not able to go on Tuesday, if he was not able to go by Tuesday, then I think Henry Columbia has to be your starting quarterback. Now, because of the way things are this year with the coronavirus, where practices are completely closed from start to finish, don't know what Alan Bowman's status is practice-wise. But again, if he was not ready to go by Tuesday, then I have a hard time seeing him being able to start on Saturday. And I have a hard time thinking he was ready to go by Tuesday based on what we saw last Saturday. Now, with that said, though, when he did get hurt, he was at least over there on the sideline throwing and doing a little light jogging
He was. It didn't look too good, though, I can tell you.
And I was going to say, then he came back after halftime and did the same thing. So that tells me, okay, this is not something that's probably going to be like a 6 or 8 week thing necessarily. Yeah. But as you said, they looked at him and said, no, you're not good to go in the second half. What did you see?
Well, I mean, for what it's worth, it's an ankle injury, which, as you well know, kind of covering football for so long, it could be a nagging injury. And I think one thing that we've seen from Matt Wells is he has been very cautious about bringing back guys when they're probably not ready. And certainly I know it's difficult because now you're kind of really in a situation where you kind of have to win because it's already the Big 12 season. You already have an altered schedule that doesn't have as many games as you would normally have. And the other thing, too, that I think that people keep forgetting is that most of these teams have not had those 3 normal non-conference games where you can kind of figure out all the timing, kind of just figuring things out in terms of the chemistry for some of these guys. And maybe that's why Allen's been off a little bit. I mean, you saw what happened when Henry Columbia came in. Granted, he came off, for lack of a better term, cold in the middle of a series, but – I mean, you can kind of see once a guy gets in his rhythm and the Texas Tech running attack was doing very well, certainly things were working really well for Texas Tech. But I think initially when I was watching him, as you mentioned, yeah, he was trying it out. He was trotting. But the thing is there was a noticeable limp, Don. Like, as much as you saw some of the stuff from the camel work, and I was kind of watching it because it was on in the press box, they weren't showing him limping after all those throws and stuff. They were just showing him throwing the football. They weren't showing him limping. He tried again during halftime. Like I said, he was throwing the ball a little bit, but you could tell, like, he was obviously, he has his helmet on, but you could tell there was a little bit of a wince there every time he was trying to run or he was trying to throw the football, which is obviously what you need to do. And that ankle is something that you certainly need to plant with as well.
Yeah. And one more point to make on the quarterbacks. There seem to have been, quite a few people maybe who were caught by surprise when Alan went down, who went in, and that it was Henry Columbia, not Maverick MacIver. I thought we had established over the last few weeks that Henry – and we had. I mean, David Yost had said publicly Henry Columbia is – if anything happens to Alan, Henry Columbia is the guy that's going to go in. He said that a week or two ago. And I think to remember there is – Saturday, Henry Columbia, that was the 14th college football game that he had played in. Now, he was the backup to Jordan Love the last 2 years, but and I don't know, maybe it was because Utah State, particularly the year before Matt Wells came here, they really got it rolling on offense and blew some teams out. So maybe he picked up some time in the second half of games. But he played six games 1 year and seven games the other year during those 2 years that he was at Utah State. So it's not like he's a guy who doesn't know college football. He's played quite a bit of college football. That was the 14th game he's played in. Maverick McIver, zero games of college football. And zero games, or I guess about a game and a half of football only in the last 2 years, given his injuries. And so that's why Columbia, pretty quickly after he got here, kind of had the advantage on Maverick McIver. And I think that's so that's why it was not a surprise, should not have been a surprise to see him be the guy to go in the game on Saturday.
And I think it's interesting because when he brought it up to David Yost as well, he also brought up the fact that he's been through a couple of preseason football practices or offseason, compared to Maverick, who, again, he's been injured, didn't really have a typical offseason this year due to the COVID-19 situation. But I think there's something to be said about a little bit of familiarity with the offense, too. David Yost has seen him work. He knows what he has already. It's just a matter of we need to put him in the correct situations to put him in to give him success. And they certainly did that. And it certainly helps to kind of pivot a little bit because they had a really good running game where Xavier White, the former Monterey Plainsman, caught fire.
Yeah. So let's shift it to that running game for just a moment. And I thought that's probably the best development that came out of Saturday, with all due respect to Henry Columbia, who did an admirable job. When he went in, I thought they found something with Xavier White. And I have to admit, when they made that switch, moving him from receiver to running back, I was not too on board with that because to me, Xavier White was such had done so much as a receiver. When you look at what he did at Monterey, the big numbers that he put up, I thought, he's really shown himself to be a quality receiver. I think he was overlooked in high school, just like West Texas recruits always are. And I thought he was a little maybe small and light to be a running back, a guy who might not do well taking a pounding in the Big 12. But wow, when he got the ball in his hands, the thing that I really liked about him was he was really decisive and hit the hole, and was not dancing around waiting for something. I mean, he saw a hole, he went, stuck his foot in the ground, as coaches say, made one cut, and boom, and he was gone. And it wasn't just one time or two times. I mean, he had five or six carries in that game that went for I think it was like a 7-yarder, a 10-yarder, a 19-yarder, the 49-yarder. He had about five or six carries, I think, that were 7 yards or more. And so to me, clearly, he is the second running back on this team right now behind Sir Roderick Thompson. And just in that brief glimpse from Saturday, I think Xavier White's a guy that probably certainly has the potential to be getting more and more time because it was pretty eye-opening, wow moment for me watching him on Saturday. I don't think that's just a flash in the pan. I see some real ability there that he could be a long-term guy for you at running back.
And it's funny you mention that because I know Tim Tadlock has said this before and you've probably heard him, but I mean, if a guy can hit, you got to find a spot for him in the lineup. And I think the same is to be said for Xavier White. And it's just a matter of the coaching staff knows he can make plays. They just got to find a spot for him. And I think they found a spot for him at running back. And here's the other thing too, Don, like if you keep him at running back, he still has the wide receiver ability. So you can slot him out if need be, and you can also use him in that sense too. So I think he's a very versatile player. It's very good that Texas Tech has now been able to find that number two running back, because now you don't necessarily have to give Sir Roderick those 25 plus carries, or maybe you do. I mean, he's a back that can do that. It's just now you have that extra home run speed, so to speak, as you mentioned. I mean, you can make that one cut and then all of a sudden he's gone. You saw that ability against Kansas State. But I certainly think that the one good thing for Texas Tech is now they're able to kind of figure out that they do have a running game. Matt Campbell, the Iowa State head coach, when I asked him what are some things that stand out? He was very complimentary about Matt Wells and saying that he feels like they've got a physical running game, which is something I can't remember the last time someone has said about the Texas Tech running attack.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's flip it over and we'll talk a little bit about Iowa State. I don't want to spend too much time on Iowa State because you have a conversation with Travis Hines, the ISU beat writer from the Des Moines Register and the Ames Tribune that'll be coming up here in a moment. You talked to Travis for about 20 minutes. So we won't go too in-depth on ISU, but just kind of a quick synopsis of Iowa State. It's going to be a lot of the same familiar names, Carlos. You got Brock Purdy back at quarterback.
Yep.
He has thrown 3 touchdown passes in the last 2 years against Texas Tech. Charlie Kohler, the talented tight end from Norman. How the Sooners didn't get him, I don't know. Yep. And then the running back, Breece Hall, the kind of the name that's on everybody's tongues this week in Lubbock is Breece Hall because he hit you last year in that game. 19 carries, 183 yards, 2 touchdowns, and he had the backbreaker that was a 75-yard touchdown run. And Tech folks have really been singing his praises this week. I think he's right at the top of the Big 12. And
he leads the Big 12, and I believe he's 5th in the country, if I'm not mistaken, when I look in those stats up. So, I mean, he's certainly the real deal. Someone you can say is one of the best running backs in the country just based on statistics. But as you mentioned, Don, it's a guy that – Texas Tech was unable to stop last year, and Matt Wells already talked about it. It looks like he's a couple pounds heavier, which doesn't bode well for your linebackers who are probably going to have to tackle him this year.
Yeah, well, at least you have some pretty good cast of linebackers. Also.
Absolutely.
That'll make for an interesting matchup. And then the flip side, you know, Iowa State continues to confound people. You know, Texas Tech gets criticized. Keith Patterson gets criticized a lot for running 3-man fronts when Texas Tech defense doesn't perform well. You flip it around, Iowa State has run a 3-man front under Matt Campbell, as I think pretty much since the beginning. And Iowa State, with like a 3-3-5 defense, is good at rush defense. They're great at rush defense. They're great at pass defense. They get pressure with 3 men. I think last year, just off the top of my head, I believe last year they were 1st or 2nd in the conference in rushing defense, passing defense, total defense, scoring defense. And again, a lot of times with a box that looks like it's got 5 or 6 guys in it, it looks like it should be able to run the football against them, but somehow people can't do it. And they have a 3-man front. It looks like, oh, they shouldn't have no problem pass protecting against those guys, and yet they still get pressure on the quarterback.
It's funny you bring that up, but again, one of those guys that was really good, Ray Lima, not back. Yes, they have to replace him, but I think that was a very –
Was the nose.
Yeah.
And I'll say this too. They lost a great linebacker in Marcel Spears.
Yes.
He got a couple of pick sixes against Tech in the last couple of years, one up in Ames and one in Lubbock. He was a senior, finally graduated. So they have lost some of those guys. But, you know, John Haycock's the defensive coordinator. It seems like they're another example of a team that has been able to identify talent, recruit to their system, and then kind of just make it work year after year as the names change, but the results stay. They continue to play what they do at a high level.
And not only that, but they get to the quarterback at a high level. I know Jaquan Bailey, a guy that you've talked about for so long, 6 tackles for loss, but 3.5 sacks so far this year. If I'm not mistaken, they're one of the tops in the Big 12 when getting to the quarterback. So that's certainly something that if you are Texas Tech, you need to kind of slow them down a little bit on.
Yeah, and Bailey's 6'2", about 6'2", 6'3", 260-pound defensive end. He's the guy that missed most or all last season with an injury. So he's back, and as you said, he's already put up big numbers, 3.5 sacks, 6 tackles for loss. The guy that always, you know, that kind of like in the secondary is Greg Eisworth, the safety. Who's one of the better safeties in the Big 12. And you know, this game is interesting because last year one of the things that irritated Texas Tech fans was Jet Duffy threw – I don't remember the number. It's something like, I literally counted them. It was 17, 18, or 19, I forget. in the high teens, numbers of those hitches and bubbles that Tech threw against Iowa State. Why did they do that? Because Iowa State's cornerbacks were playing bail technique coverage. They were playing way off, and then they're inverting those safeties down close and taking away the middle of the field. And so that's what Iowa State was giving Texas Tech. And so Tech continued to throw those, all those little quick hitters, yep, those quick little horizontal passes trying to get 5 yards or so.
And they're like runs. I mean, as much as it's terrible to say, I mean, it's like a run game. It's not, obviously, because you're throwing the football, but at least you're getting positive yardage. And that's what Texas Tech was able to do last year.
Yeah, but it was so – I was going to say it was so – they did so much last year.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be interested to see if Iowa State does the same thing schematically this year, and you see a lot of the same stuff playing out. If you see Henry Columbia or Bowman throwing a lot of those little – the bubbles and hitches and, you know, those nails that, like I say – that irritate Tech fans so much.
Well, it irritated them, but here's the thing too, Don. Like, if they're able to run the football, which is something they haven't been able to do the last couple times that they've gone against Iowa State, that could certainly help you in that, again, that cloud coverage that everyone always seems to talk about every time Iowa State is on the schedule or they're next up, that cloud coverage. If you're able to run the football, that brings up some of those guys, that changes their coverage because they've got to bring more guys in the box to – help slow down some of those running attacks. And I honestly think that could be the X factor for Texas Tech. If Sir Roderick and Xavier White, who now has stepped up last weekend, can somehow find a way to get open holes and just kind of open up the defense part of me, I think they've got the guys to attack Iowa State, who I want to say that the one thing, I know you talked about the cornerbacks and kind of all that stuff. I think Texas Tech has the ability to beat them up top. It's just a matter of, do you have guys that can do that? We know Bowman can do that. He's just not that accurate on some of the deep balls, at least early on. That can certainly improve, but can Henry Columbia throw the deep ball? And I think that could be another big difference maker. One, if you run the football, and two, if you can beat them over the top.
Yeah. So again, Carlos has a visit coming up here momentarily with Travis Hines from the Des Moines Register and Ames Tribune. So we will, since they will go a lot more in depth on ISU, let's skip ahead with our portion and go to reader and listener questions, Carlos. We invite those each week on Twitter. You can reach Carlos at CM Silva Jr. and you can reach me at EJ _ Don Williams. And so let's go to the questions, Carlos.
All righty. First one from Galen. I don't know how to say his last name, so I apologize, Galen Dragiev. That's at Galen Dragiev. Hey, Carlos, any idea why Sir Roderick barely played the second half last game? Again, it would just go back to – and I think we asked this, too, after the game, Don, or maybe someone asked Matt Wells during the Monday presser, but he just had the hot hand. DeAndre Smith had seen something that Xavier White was doing so well, so they made sure to give him the football, and certainly he produced. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Xavier White might have mentioned it after the game. It was just – I had the hot hand. Coach Smith was just trying to keep me to get the football.
Yeah, they went into that game, the game plan that Xavier White would get into the game, would get some carries, and I think he did so well with those carries and that little inside zone run that it was working so well that they stuck with him longer than he expected, longer than Xavier expected, admittedly, and I think longer than they probably expected originally. But, again, I think that was based on simply performance. They liked what they were seeing from White so well, the way the offense was moving, that they probably gave him another series or two more than they had originally thought they would.
So long story short, or a little summary, Xavier White was pretty good. Sir Roderick's not hurt. There's nothing wrong with Sir Roderick. It's just Xavier White had the hot hand, and he did really well. Now next to Ryan King now, I guess if you want to call him friend of the program, Don, I suppose. He had a tweet. I just know it gets him mad when I make fun of him. So he says, power rank these natural forces, since I suppose the Iowa State Cyclones are on the schedule. Tornadoes, hurricanes, cyclones, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions.
Since Ryan grew up in Oklahoma, anybody who grows up anywhere near Oklahoma should know that tornadoes would rank number one on the list.
That is correct.
Forces. And then for me after that, it would be number two, hurricanes. Number three, number two would be earthquakes.
Okay.
One, tornadoes, two, earthquakes. Three would be volcanic eruptions. Four would be hurricanes. And I guess five would be cyclones, with apologies to Dorothy on the Wizard of Oz.
I think I'm going to kind of go the same as you. I agree, because more than likely everyone that's kind of been around Texas, or like you said, around Oklahoma, kind of knows that tornadoes are really dangerous. Obviously, all the other ones are dangerous. But I think in terms of what you did, I think that was pretty good. So now to go to the actual question that he asked, what will be the Big 12 championship game and champion? Which certainly has a different look now after Texas Tech, Oklahoma, and Texas are now 0-2.
Yeah, you know, I'll kind of make a wait a minute. You said now Texas is not 0-2.
Pardon me. You're right. I'm sorry. You're right.
Oklahoma though is 0-2, and I'll make a kind of bold prediction here. I say the Big 12 championship game this year is not going to include the Sooners for the first time since last time you had 2009. Last time you had a Big 12 championship that did not involve Oklahoma was 2009. And before that, it was actually in 2009, it was UT against Nebraska. Before that, 2005, when you had UT against Colorado in that 70-3 game. And, you know, I think I'm picking Texas this Saturday in the Red River rivalry based on experience at quarterback. I think the two teams are pretty even going into this game.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a case of Sam Ellinger with the experience over Spencer Rattler, who has the talent and is going to be a really good quarterback the longer he goes. But right now I'm picking the experienced seniors team over the inexperienced freshmen's team. So I think that puts OU at 0-3 after this weekend in the conference, and then they're not able to get back and make it to the Big 12 championship game after that. Maybe they take another loss somewhere down the road. And I tell you, so you have three teams right now that have started 2-0, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Kansas State. Of those three teams, I think I like Iowa State's chances the best because of what I just mentioned. Quarterback, what we've talked about earlier, they have the leading rusher in the Big 12. I think the combination of experience at quarterback, good running game, solid defensive team, I think this could be a year where Iowa State makes the Big 12 championship game. And, Kansas State's 2-0, but they have a hard back end of the schedule. They finish – let's see, last four games, they have Oklahoma State at home. They go to Iowa State. They go to Baylor. And they play Texas. They get Texas at home. But I think Kansas State has kind of a hard, difficult road. Oklahoma State, not sure what they're looking like at quarterback right now.
Not great, Don. Not great.
I think this could be a year that Iowa State, this could be their year. And then I tell you, the team that's kind of the team that maybe slips up and surprises you this year, people have said the conference is wide open, and clearly it is wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does that invite? What does that open up the possibility for? It opens up the possibility for one of the best coached teams in the Big 12 to take advantage of that. Now I'm talking about Gary Patterson and TCU.
I was about to say, I mean, if Max Duggan can stay healthy, that team's pretty good on defense.
Yeah. I mean, I saw him carve up Texas Tech last year with the way that he runs the football.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, again, a year when it's wide open, I think this could be a year where Gary Patterson is able to take advantage of that, and the Horned Frogs have another surge. And maybe so I'm looking at maybe an Iowa State or an Iowa State TCU championship game. Could you imagine that?
That could be something. I'm sure the ratings will be happy to see those two teams, but not to talk a lot, because I totally agree with you on the Iowa State pick. TCU was going to be my sleeper pick. Technically, had Skylar Thompson not gotten injured last weekend, I probably would have stuck with Kansas State, just because I like what Chris Kleiman's been doing. The team looks really good. They've got a really good running back in Deuce Vaughn. And I thought that the defense has played pretty well. And the other thing, too, that they do so well, Don, I mean, they've blocked a kick in three straight or blocked a punt in three straight games. When you do something like that and have a game changing special teams type unit, I think that really bodes well later on in the season. But it's really tough to kind of make that call, especially when you don't know if their starting quarterback's going to come back. But I do like the fact that Iowa State could be there. I would say with the loss, we'll see. People will probably know why I say that when they read the paper tomorrow. Little hint, hint. But let's go to some questions. Do you want a serious one or do you want some funny ones?
Let's go back to another serious one.
All right. The next one, this has been something that was kind of mentioned earlier when you asked Matt Wells about seniors returning because of that blanket waiver. Greg, again, I apologize if I say your name wrong. Vochaska, Greg Vochaska on Twitter, which seniors will return in your opinion, and will any other seniors possibly return of the blanket waiver exception?
Well, let's see. Tech has 17 seniors. Matt Wells said on Monday that he said two of the 17 have already told him that, yes, I want to come back. I plan on me being back next year. And Matt did not want to say who those were. He said in the middle of the season, he, I guess, maybe thinks that would be a distraction or whatever. He said plan would be to announce those after the season. So he didn't give any indication on who those guys are. So here's me guessing, and of course this may be completely incorrect, but I would think one guy who would be interested in returning this year would be Jacob Morgenstern, because we talked about the last week or two. Here's a guy who had a hard time even getting on the field on defense at Duke, and now he is a guy who is playing a lot of snaps and playing a very important role for you at Texas Tech. So I would if I'm Jacob Morgenstern, I'd think, wow, I'm getting more playing time than. I was patient for 4 years at Duke. It didn't pay off in much playing time on defense. Now I come to Texas Tech, and they seem to love me here and are giving me a lot of snaps. I want more as much of this as I can get. I would think that he would be a guy who would be interested in playing another year for the Red Raiders. And I think similarly about Josh Berger at offensive tackle. You know, Josh Berger's case, you know, he was, again – his story was he was not really recruited much by FBS schools, very little, if at all. And so he went to Wofford because that was kind of best opportunity for him at the FCS level. Wanted, though, a chance to kind of prove himself at a higher level. Comes here as a starter, getting to experience Big 12 football. So for kind of a similar reason to Jacob Morgenstern, he's a guy who kind of paid his dues so that he could play in the FBS. Now he has a starting role. I would think that he would be a guy who would be interested in making this experience last longer than 1 year if it's available to him. Somebody else I'd like to see kind of come back just because it would be an interesting statistic. Seth Collins would be a seventh year senior in college football if he comes back next year. So there's a possibility for him. And then some other guys, you know, a guy like, say, Rico Jeffers and Colin Skuler at linebacker. Maybe they're guys who think at the end of this year I could have an opportunity to play in the NFL. And so maybe they decide to go pro and pass up an additional year. And, again, all of this is me brainstorming. This is not
correct.
This is not based
on – don't put this on TMZ. Please don't.
I was going to say, this is not based on any inside information. This is just me thinking out loud on these guys. And you got thoughts on some of the seniors as well, Carlos?
I mean, it'd be interesting to see if Eli Howard came back, because I think here's the thing that seniors have to weigh. One, do you want to come back and finish potentially your degree? Do you want another degree? Do you think your talents are good enough to continue in the NFL, and do you think you're going to bet on yourself and go to the NFL, or do you want another year, considering, again, this is totally just, again, off the top of my head, but for the NBA draft, that thing's been pushed back several months. What if the NFL draft gets pushed back several months? I mean, there are so many factors to this in terms of if you want a definite answer, but I certainly do agree that at least with the points that you made about Jacob and Josh and everyone else, I think the same point could be made for Eli if he wanted to come back. Now, again, that's a lot of football that you play, especially on the defensive side. if he wants to continue playing college football, certainly that's something that everyone would look at, just because of the fact that when you're playing college football, you're obviously getting a lot more than maybe you would if you're maybe trying to think of the word, but an unsigned free agent, so to speak. You know, you feel like maybe you got a little bit more, you're getting more tape, maybe getting more playing time. Again, there are a lot of factors, but I do agree in terms of your stuff.
Yeah, and you kind of touched on something as well. For some of these guys, it's not necessarily just a football decision. It may be get another year of school paid for.
Yep.
Nail down a master's degree or another master's degree.
Yeah.
Or another bachelor's degree. Yeah. From an education standpoint, you know, you got that. That's a pretty big potential bonus for you. One more thought, though, from a football standpoint.
Sure.
I think Travis Coons would be another guy who might be open to coming back from the standpoint of, okay, you're a tight end in an offense that says it needs tight end, needs and wants tight ends. So they're not going to phase out your position next year. So
he did get some catches and some yards last week. So
yeah.
Sticking on at least some, because some of these have about the same theme, so I'm going to try and keep them together. Xavier White was impressive last week. Was it a fluke? If it isn't, he needs a nickname. Got any good ones?
Well, I called him the X-Man in passing the other day.
The X-Factor would be mine, just because it's a wrestling reference. So.
Yeah, I wasn't very creative or original there, but kind of like what I said earlier in the program, yep. I don't think it's a fluke. I think he's a kid that's got some real ability. And again, we know it because when he was at Lubbock Monterey, he was a 1,000-yard receiver on a team that was about four rounds deep in the playoffs. But guys who play high school football in West Texas generally do not get recruited, to anywhere near the degree that they should. So, no, not a fluke on Xavier White. I think he's a guy who's got some staying power.
That was from Chaz Poe, TTU. On Twitter, because I know you like shouting out the Twitter handle. So
I'm
from Robert Powell, longtime listener. Appreciate you. Says he appreciated your article on the culture tick. If you haven't read it, of course, it's on LubbockOnline.com, where Don mentions it's not necessarily a coaching factor that may be dealing with some of these fourth quarter. I don't know what the word is. I know Coach Wells didn't feel like it was a meltdown, but I would just say maybe you're just not able to close things on, but just that it's a losing culture that they're trying to change. And I agree with you. I mean, it's obviously going to try. They're trying to do that with getting new recruits in, trying to change the buy-in factor. But Robert's question is, how does Wells's culture differ from Cliff's and Tuberville's and Leach's for that matter? And clearly you would be the person to ask. So that's why you are getting asked this, Don. And if you need me to babble, I can babble for a little
while. Well,
chat.
How does it differ from Cliff's? I've said Matt Wells is a different style of coach from what Texas Tech has had really almost at any point since I started covering Texas Tech football in 1986. He kind of his demeanor as a coach seems to fit more the head coaching prototype than nearly any of those guys, because he's engaged as an X's and O's guys. He's engaged as a recruiter. He's engaged as outreach and booster functions, all those sorts of things. But from a cultural standpoint, he's battling, as we've talked about, he's battling the same thing that Cliff did for the last half dozen years. And that is that, you've yet to win football games on any extended basis. And that has been an oppressive factor, I think, in this program and probably in this locker room to a large extent.
I think pain point is certainly another one that you could use with the fan base, because, again, I mentioned it before, it's a lot easier to maybe take a loss when you lose by 20 and you expect to lose by 20. It's another thing when you lead a team by 15 with 3 minutes and you fumble it, for lack of a better term. And I think that's the tough thing for some of the Texas Tech fans, is they realize that they are on the cusp. It's just, it's a lot easier just to complain when you lose compared to realizing that there are some things that are turning. And again, maybe you can talk to this more than I can, Don, but I just feel like compared to years past, it just feels like there are plays that if they make them, it's a little bit different of a game compared to maybe in previous years where it's more of a, let's try and score as many points as we can and just get stops. Whereas this one, it's a little bit more cerebral on the offensive end.
Yeah. And I think that was, you're kind of touching or moving, touching on a topic that I think was kind of desired from the top. When I say from the top, I mean Kirby Hoka. Kirby was tired of playing games that were 55 to that, where Tech was scoring 52 and giving up 55, or where Tech was scoring, where Tech was scoring,
50, couldn't win those ugly games, you know, 50, so to speak.
Where Tech was scoring 53 and couldn't give up, and I was giving up 70, a la Oklahoma State game 1 year. He felt like you have to play better defense. And that is why you're seeing the traditional air raid go away. And I think Matt Wells, and we've talked about this defensively, has gotten some pretty decent personnel on the front seven now. They're still having trouble on the back end.
Yeah.
But they're playing better defensively. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably the biggest difference. That's not necessarily a cultural thing. That's more of a X's and O's thing. But Kirby Hoka said before last season that you gotta play
all three phases.
You gotta play all three phases. Now, I was trying to remember what he said, kind of word for word. He said something like Texas Tech has played great offense, prolific offense, and we've seen where that has gotten us.
Yeah.
Clearly applied nowhere very much. And so he wants somebody to come in and make the team tougher and play better defense. And Wells has at least tried to start to recruit toward that. And I think including the tight end and the offense lends itself more to that style as well. You haven't seen the benefit of that yet. But at some point, they want 6'6", 250-pound guy who can run and catch, and who can inline block. Those guys don't grow on trees, but that's at least a position that they are recruiting for now, that they have been recruiting to in the much over the past 20 years.
We'll try and make this one a little bit short because we kind of talked about it, but. Are players being coached to win when we have the lead to start the fourth quarter? I would say yes. And then thoughts on Columbia as the new starter, irrespective of Bowman feeling well enough to play, which, again, we kind of alluded to earlier.
Yeah. Are they coached to win in the fourth quarter? Of course they're coached to win. Yeah.
Coached to win the game.
Columbia will start only as long as Alan Bowman is out. When Alan Bowman is healthy to play again, Alan Bowman will be the starter. Matt Wells has said that, and he should be the starter because he's the better quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Next question.
Let's see here. Ian says, are we at this point cursed?
No.
Yeah.
I'm going to write a column about that someday, but no, Texas Tech is not cursed. I can't believe that people actually believe that, but I hear it so often that I think some people actually do believe that. I'll write a column on that someday. People need to understand that, and this question was from who?
Ian.
Ian.
VR Texas.
Normally, people who say Texas Tech is cursed say that Tech needs to, quote, pay Mike Leach. But if Tech pays Mike Leach anything at this point, then they couldn't, because it would be a gift, and they couldn't do that legally. Yeah. So, I'm not sure. I believe they paid him to the point that he up to the time they breached his contract that year. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, if anything, it keeps him in the news when he beats LSU after they lose about 17 players, both of their coordinators. So, I mean,
and then ends Arkansas's 20-game SEC losing streak.
John Sokolov, Johnny Sox, sent me a text afterward, and he said, so this is the Mike Leach experience, isn't it? So, big win and then big loss after that. So along those same lines, John Lanty, Lantern 96, it's actually a pretty good name there. Please predict the state of the program in 2024. So 4 years down the line, how do you see this? Is Matt Wells still a program, or?
Well, it's nearly impossible to predict, because there's so many things that go into that beyond just what's going on at Texas Tech, for one thing. Just, for example, you're playing Iowa State this weekend. 4 years from now, is Matt Campbell still going to be coaching Iowa State, or is he going to have moved on to something bigger and better? And if he does, then does Iowa State sack back? Same with Lincoln Riley. Exactly. Yeah. From a purely Texas Tech perspective, 2024 would be, let me think here in my head, make sure I'm doing the math right. 2024 is the last year of Matt Wells' contract.
I believe you're correct. And there would also be some projects that would be finished at that point, in theory, the FTF, some of the stadium projects that you've reported on as well.
Well, we shall see. Who knows with the way the
correct.
Now that all the cutbacks that have been imposed based on COVID-19 and
correct.
How much longer that will last. Heaven forbid that we're still talking about the pandemic at this time next year and additional cutbacks necessitated. If that happens, some of these projects may be on hold who knows how long.
Yeah.
But I guess back to the original point, 2024 is the last year of Matt Wells' contract. He signed a 6-year deal when he came here. He would be in the position at that point, obviously, that he would have long since had all the players that he wanted coaching the style of football that he wanted, with this, as like I mentioned a moment ago, for example, having a 6'6", 250-pound tight end. You'd like to see him have, a Mackey Award candidate. David Yost had that, and had like three of them when he was coaching his three, with Martin Rucker and Chase Kaufman and Michael Agnew from Plainview. They had the best tight ends in the nation. Missouri, when Yost was coaching there, had the tight ends that people envy, kind of like they envy Iowa State's tight ends right now. David Yost had that at Missouri.
He also had a pretty good –
let's say 6 years down the road, maybe he has – they have that at Texas Tech. And you're about to say?
He had some pretty good quarterbacks in Missouri.
And then
also you have a guy in Baron Morton, assuming everything works out. He's throwing up points like nobody's business in high school right now.
Yeah, and people who have seen him play much more than I have, based on things I've heard, don't sleep on Donovan Smith.
Correct.
He is
very dynamic. No, I've seen Donovan. That dude can play.
And I'm usually skeptical of listed heights, but Donovan's listed at 6'5", and having stood – right up there next to him, interviewing him.
Yeah, well, you looked up to him. You looked up to him.
He is a really tall kid. I believe he's 6'5".
Yeah.
And he has the frame to be 230 or however big he wants to be, 230, 235, 240 with an arm. I think he's a guy that it would not surprise me if a year or two from now we're talking about him as much as anybody as Texas Tech quarterback. So to get back to the original question, predict the state of the program in 2024. I think Tech will be back on kind of the plane or the tier that you historically see most with Texas Tech football, which is a team that wins 6, 7, 8 games.
If you get the right
group of kind of seniors keeping together for a long time. Maybe break through and have a 9-10 win season, that sort of thing. So
future's bright, according to you.
I think the opportunity's there. Yeah, and again, trying to predict 4 years out is impossible. But if you want me to say something beyond, who knows what 2024 holds?
Well, that's what I would say.
There it was.
You're a lot nicer than I would be. I would have just said, who knows? It's 4 years from now.
Next question.
Yeah, silly questions now. David Collier, I guess he's a friend of the show, I suppose, since he is on our podcast at some point on Monday. Please rate Jack Trice Stadium press box for us on a scale of 0 to 10. I'll be able to do this this weekend because I'll actually check it out. You've been there more than I have.
You know, Jack Trice Stadium press box has not really been upgraded, I don't believe, in quite a few years. It's kind of Spartan and small, as Big 12 press, as Big 12 press boxes go.
Kansas State was nice. I'll say that.
Yeah. Because theirs was recently renovated in the past decade.
Yeah.
Iowa State's, to my knowledge, has not really had any significant renovation. With that said, though, I'm not going to say a bad word about Jack Trice Stadium or Ames. I enjoy my trips up there. I like, particularly this time of year, I'm envious of you, Carlos, because you're going to be there Saturday. I'm not going to be there Saturday.
Yeah.
But it's a great time of year for football, and I kind of like that football, fall football in the Midwest, where you get a little bit of a bite, kind of cooler air.
Yeah, but the football weather.
But it's not bitter cold up there yet.
Correct.
This time of year. You know, I like watching football up there, you know, in the afternoon with the long shadows and, like I say, about 60 degrees or whatever.
Yeah.
And from a press box standpoint, who cares whether it's smaller hasn't been renovated much. It's about the food.
And absolutely.
From my recollections, seems to me that when I've been in Jack Trice before, they've served us like brats and hot dogs.
That's all you.
And you know, that's
your wheelhouse.
That's right up my alley. Some broccoli.
Yeah, that is your wheelhouse.
Steak beans they've served. And so, let's see, scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest, 8 or 9.
There you go. I'm going to probably re-rate that when I go there. So we'll see. But the thing is like, at this point, it's an 8 or 9 for me because I know I'm going to go to Hickory Park, which I know you've been to, so.
Hickory Park is awesome. Now I'm sure there's probably Ames folks who'll say, "Oh, Hickory Park gets all the attention, but you should go to this other place that nobody talks."
Hey, you know what? If they want to tell me to go somewhere, I'm more than happy to go to. Which, by the way,
I'm like you. Hickory Park is a standby. You do not go to Ames without going to Hickory Park.
Yes, and you get the ice cream. Always get the ice cream.
Well, I have so much. I want so many entrees that I'm not sure I've had the ice cream at Hickory Park because
it's fantastic, Don. It is fantastic.
I think I stuffed myself on barbecue inside so much that I don't leave room for the ice cream.
Yeah. Well, you'll be happy to know I found a place called Guilty Biscuit that has a happy hour for biscuits and gravy in Manhattan. So next time you go there, you'll be able to get biscuits and gravy for $5.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. So last one, I believe. Which Allsup's location do you love the most? From Alan Corbin.
You know, I can't remember the last time I've been actually to a literal Allsup's. Go to convenience stores all the time, but I can't remember the last time I've been in a literal Allsup's. But I don't know. When I was growing up in Crest, up through sixth grade, you know, you had closed campus. But then once you got to seventh grade, you could actually leave campus to go across Interstate 27 to Lawson's Restaurant. Or to the Allsup's there. And so when we're in seventh and eighth grade, you leave campus and go. Imagine this, crossing I-27, divided four lanes.
So in total or four total?
Four total.
Okay, gotcha.
Two lanes north, two lanes south.
Yeah.
And you can cross that. I don't know if they still can, but you can crawl back then. I mean, when we were 13 years old.
Yeah.
Amazing that none of us got hit by a semi truck. But yeah, so we
were pretty smart.
So we go across to the Allsup's and have the fried burritos. I think they're like 39, 40 cents when I was a kid. That was we're talking 40.
At a zero now.
You know, we're talking more than 40 years ago now.
Yeah, you got to add a zero to that number now.
We missed one question. Robert Shoemake, although I'm not going to be able to answer this quite yet, Robert Shoemake asked, does Kirby have the worst track record with football coaches in regards to winning percentage in the last 25 years? That's a good question, Robert. But in the time that between the time that we solicited questions and the time that we're taping, that's going to require a little more. That's going to require some pretty extensive research. And so, it's a good question, and you piqued my interest. And I'm going to try to do a deep dive into that over the next week or two and see what I can come up with. That's obviously a topic of conversation. It's Kirby's hire of Al Golden at Miami did not pan out. And his hire of Cliff here did not really pan out. And that was
that would be the last one then, Don.
So far. Yeah. So that's it. That's it for questions.
That's it. And it looks like we went a lot longer than I thought we were going to go. But you know what? We got to answer everything, right?
We do our best. Yeah. We appreciate folks sending us questions. And
correct.
With us. So, again, if you have a question, you can send it each week to my Twitter is at @AJ_DonWilliams. Carlos's is at CM Silva Jr. What does the M stand for, Carlos? I never asked you.
Mario, as in Super Mario.
All right.
Yeah. You learned something about Cosa Eldridge. You learned something about me. Mario, it's Italian. So, there you go.
All right. Let's see. So, coming up here right after us, Carlos, again, visiting with Travis Hines, Iowa State beat writer for the Des Moines Register and the Ames Tribune. Stay tuned for that. We will talk to you again next week. And so, again, for Carlos, I'm Don Lewis from the Avalanche Journal. Take care and visit with you soon.
And hello, everyone. This is Carlos Silva bringing you the second portion of the Red Raider podcast. And on this one, since we're doing the opponent, focusing on Iowa State, we're bringing on an expert on all things Iowa State, that being Travis Hines, who is with the Des Moines Register. Pardon me, I can't talk today. And then also the Ames Tribune as well. Travis, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, I appreciate you. And obviously, we're going to talk a little bit about the Cyclones. But I think the first thing I have to ask you, just because I think it's on the minds of most people, but I guess just how is Ames or how is just the state of Iowa doing after that big win over Oklahoma last weekend?
You know, people are excited. You know, I think obviously there's about a trillion things going on in the world right now. So the reaction maybe isn't as euphoric as we would have seen a year ago or 2 years ago. But I think people are generally really excited because they came into this year anticipating a really strong Iowa State team. And right off the bat, their faith, I think, got shaken with that loss to Louisiana. But you bounce back, win at TCU, get your first win at home over Oklahoma in 60 years. And really, that Oklahoma game, Iowa State was certainly the better team. I don't think there was a talent gap. I think the only difference was Iowa State executed a little bit better and a little bit more than Oklahoma, which is not something you can normally say in that matchup. So I think people are excited because now, you know, the hopes and dreams of a Big 12 title game are certainly feasible and viable with a 2-0 record with already a win against Oklahoma. And I think people are looking at this game this weekend as let's get through this week. Then it's a bye week. And then the schedule ramps back up with a trip to Oklahoma State. But people, I think, are back to being inspired and hopeful that this Iowa State team can maybe be one of the best in program history, or at least one of the most accomplished.
Well, certainly they've been accomplished in the month of October going. I want to say it's like 11-1 in October since 2017. What's made them so good as the season kind of progresses? Is it that they've played a little bit better? Is it Matt Campbell's just recruiting the guys that he finally needs? Cause it just seems like once they get into October, like everything just seems to click for them. And typically that's usually Big 12 play, which is usually pretty good for them.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll start off by saying, I don't know because it's obviously unknowable, but I do have a theory and it's one I've really developed over the last probably 2.5 years. You know, they beat Oklahoma in Oklahoma in 2017 to start off October. And then they went undefeated in October in 2017 and 2018, lost just once last year, obviously won last week. So they've been, you know, about as dominant as you can get in the month of October. And my theory is that Campbell truly preaches to be the same person, player, team, every day, win, lose, or draw. And I think where that's, that can be a double-edged sword, is that there's maybe a lack of urgency sometimes to be your best right off the bat, because you, he wants you to be the same every day and getting better every day. So Iowa State has really struggled the first month of the season under Campbell. Some of that is they play Iowa every year, so the schedule is not as much of a cupcake as maybe it otherwise would be. But they've struggled. They're under 500 under Campbell in the first month of the season. But I think when they have – so I don't think that they get off to great starts, because there maybe just isn't that sense of urgency to get out of the gates gangbusters. But where I think it pays off for them in October is that it's just a steady progression of getting better. And if they, they start to play their best football after 3, 4, 5 weeks of practice, usually games, but this year practice – because of the pandemic. And I think they just really start to round into form after that, you know, 3 or 4 games or 4 or 5 weeks. And then they're really good. And then I think the difference in November then becomes those first two teams were probably undermanned and undermatched, where they weren't as talented and they weren't as deep and they just ran out of gas. Last year, I don't really have an answer for, because they should not have faltered at the end the way that they did. So I think that'll be the question this year, is can they keep getting better through October and then sustain it in November?
Once again, we're talking to Travis Hines, who provides Iowa State's sports coverage. Again, can't talk for the Des Moines Register and the Ames Tribune as well. Talking Texas Tech, Iowa State, they both take on each other in Ames, Iowa, 2:30 on ABC. Going into that contest, we're going to talk a little bit about the matchup, but I think just kind of going on that thought that you were just kind of going on, Travis, a couple guys that have been really good for them, or I shouldn't even say a couple, but several, starting with Brock Purdy, the quarterback, you got Breece Hall, the running back, and then, of course, Charlie Kohler, the great tight end who got a victory over his hometown Norman, Oklahoma Sooners over the weekend. I guess just what have you seen in terms of their development, or what's made them that much better? Because it seems like they like to run the football with Breece, and then not too much really goes on in terms of the wide receiver so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to those three standouts, Breece Hall, Brock Purdy, and Charlie Kohler, I think what really jumps out to me is all of them played huge contributing roles as true freshmen. So I think it speaks to Iowa State and Matt Campbell's recruiting in their targeting of players that they think can be successful, not only over the long term for Iowa State, but immediately. You know, Brock Purdy comes in midway through his freshman year and, you know, was part of the October revival 2 years ago, where they went undefeated in October. Yeah. Breece Hall comes in, didn't play his first, essentially did not play much in the first 4 games last year. Then all of a sudden, starting in October, is the feature back. Now he's maybe one of the best running backs in the Big 12. Charlie Kohler, same deal. Almost immediately established himself as a go-to wide receiver. Very dynamic. Not the most athletic guy in the world, but by tight end standards, is athletic, is dynamic, has great hands. You know, he's a very high football IQ type player. Brock Purdy talks so much about, you know, really that Kohler is the guy when a play either breaks down or just does not go as planned, or there's any kind of chaos, that's who Purdy zeroes in on, because he knows that Kohler is going to be in a place that where he should be. And that if there is a 50-50 ball or a tight window that he's got to put it in, he can trust Kohler to either make the catch or make sure nothing happens with a DB or a linebacker where Iowa State's looking at a turnover. So all three of those guys are, you know, super immersed in the Iowa State culture. They're the guys that Campbell and his staff targeted and found success right away. And they do make for a dynamic offense. You know, the question is, you know, they're only going to go as far as the offensive line can take them. And that offensive line has been okay this year. Usually that is their huge Achilles heel over the last 4 years under Campbell. They've been better this year, but still you're not looking them at anything like the 90s Cowboys or anything. So that is the big question going forward. They've been nicked up at that position group too. And for the quarterback, the running back, and the tight end to be their best. And then hopefully, I think if you're Iowa State, get the wide receivers involved, like, as you mentioned, haven't been. They need that offensive line to get healthy and then to step up and, you know, really give them some holes to work with, and certainly give Purdy a clean pocket or two.
So with all that said, I guess obviously you've spoken to Matt Campbell and some of the players, I would think, at this point through Zoom or however you all kind of do your press conferences. What have been some of the biggest questions for Matt Campbell to ask? Because I know when I was talking to you earlier this week, he was very, very high in terms of praise of Matt Wells, who's in his second year with Texas Tech. Matt Wells offering the same type of praise for Matt Campbell, saying even as far as going that's the type of program he wants to build, a team that plays real good defense, runs the football, which is certainly what they've done with Breece Hall. But I guess what are some of the big questions that were asked of Matt Campbell, and what has he kind of mentioned about Texas Tech so far?
Well, like you mentioned, it certainly seems to be the mutual admiration society between Wells and Campbell, because, you know, Campbell couldn't say enough about Wells. And I think we probably shouldn't be surprised by that. I think they're both similar in terms of their demeanor, in terms of, you know, really stressing the fundamentals of football. They both came up through being head coaches at smaller universities and then getting a Power Five job. So it's probably not surprising that these guys have a lot of respect for each other. And I think for Iowa State, what they're concerned about is, regardless if it's Bowman or Columbia, is that the other one? The other quarterback?
Yep, Columbia.
Whichever one they are, I think they're concerned about Texas Tech because they think both of those guys know the system well and can hurt them. Their running game, I think, is probably the number one thing that Iowa State is concerned about. And then, you know, on the other side of the ball, I think Iowa State's really I think its focus is on itself, because if it can clean some stuff up, you know, I don't know that they're overly concerned about that Texas Tech defense right now.
Kind of a interesting situation. I don't know if you've even kind of noticed it, but at least from Texas Tech's perspective, it'll be the second week in a row where they take on a team that took that kind of recorded a big victory over Oklahoma. Have you seen the Iowa State, I guess, players or coaches kind of say like, oh, we have to make sure that we're not kind of looking forward and realizing that this is kind of the big win and we have to kind of hear all these great things about us and still kind of focus this weekend?
Yeah, I think, you know, for everything, they were certainly asked about that, but I think the evidence of the last three Octobers suggests this is a team that can handle success pretty well. That, I mean, they've had big wins. This isn't, you know, frankly, it's not even their biggest win ever over Oklahoma. When they went down and beat Baker Mayfield's Oklahoma team in 2017 with essentially their third string quarterback, you know, that was certainly a more shocking win than winning at home, you know, basically at full strength. So this is a team that has big wins. This is a team that I think has that process oriented mentality. And it's one that last year, having, you know, really stumbled to the finish line and not getting to where they wanted to be, losing a lot of close games, you know, where they were really, you know, if a couple of games are 2 or 3 points difference, they have a very different season. And I think getting so close makes them understand and appreciate the razor thin margin that every team is on, where you can have a great season or you can have a mediocre season, and that can really turn on a play or two in any of your games. And that's especially true, I think, in a year like this, where you have a shortened schedule and you don't know from week to week what those COVID tests are going to say and allow you to play or not.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure this is another question that you probably get asked each time anyone needs an opponent breakdown of Iowa State, but it seems like everyone always talks about that cloud coverage. I guess, how have you kind of seen that evolve and just kind of the way that everything's kind of worked out for Iowa State, where in a league with so many high scoring offenses, Iowa State has somehow found a way to neutralize some of them, including Texas Tech, a team that Matt Campbell has not lost to since he's joined Iowa State.
Yeah, I think the defense helped itself early in Campbell's tenure and defensive coordinator John Haycock's tenure with being schematically different. But I do think the longer they've been in the league, the more teams have had gotten film and have an idea about how to attack it. But what's allowed Iowa State to sustain still being one of the Big 12's best defenses is they've gotten a lot better in terms of playmaking, I think, within their personnel. You know, for years, Iowa State had zero pass rush. Now they've got Jaquan Bailey, who just became the all-time sack leader at Iowa State. He had 3.5 sacks against TCU earlier this year. You know, they had Ray Lima in the middle of the defense for the last 3 years, who was fantastic at stopping the rush and eating up blockers, but was not a pass rusher. This year they have Latrell Bankston, who was one of the top junior college recruits in the country. He's already got a couple sacks from just rushing up the middle. You know, Will McDonald is probably going to push Bailey's sack record during his career. Super dynamic. Mike Rose, Orion Vance, Greg Eisworth, you know, Anthony Johnson, Lawrence White in the secondary. Those are athletic playmakers and obviously skilled and talented guys too, that I think, you know, whatever the league has done to be able to catch up schematically with Iowa State, the Cyclones have been able to stay a step ahead because their personnel, you know, first just was upgraded in terms of talent and skill, but a lot of those guys that were good in 2017 and 2018 are now upperclassmen because they played a lot of young guys in those first years. So that's, it's a talented group. It's an athletic group. And now finally it's an experienced group.
So obviously they can get to the quarterback, but are they able to stop the run as well as Matt Campbell would like? Because one thing that I had asked him earlier this week during the teleconference was just some initial thoughts about Texas Tech and some things that surprised me a little bit, maybe not to you, but the fact that he was just so complimentary about their running game and it being so physical, because that's been something that I know for a lot of Tech fans, the one thing you think about with Texas Tech is that you like to throw the ball, but certainly they've been rushing the ball very well with Sir Roderick Thompson, and Xavier White really stepped up last week against Kansas State.
Yeah, you know, TCU got him in the run game early a couple weeks ago in Fort Worth. They were really able to attack them on the inside, and Iowa State was able to make a couple of adjustments and really neutralize that. I don't think Oklahoma had a ton of success on the ground. So they've been pretty good defensively against the run. I think the key is for them is they have to be sound tacklers, because the way that their defense work is for the rushing attack, they funnel a lot of ball carriers to their linebackers. And if those linebackers aren't sound in their tackling, if they're sloppy, you know, you're already in the second level. It doesn't take much to break off a big run if you're able to make a guy miss at that second level. So that's where Iowa State, I don't want to call it a high wire act, because obviously they've had a lot of success with it, but you know, you are introducing a level of risk there that so far Iowa State's been able to mitigate.
Now, going back to things that people do know about Texas Tech, they certainly have a really good wide receiver core, starting with TJ Vasher, Eric Izukanma, who kind of stepped up last year, and then Keshawn Carter, who's now kind of seen his resurgence and development in his second year with Matt Wells and company. But from your perspective, I know the biggest question will be if Alan Bowman will start or will it be Henry Columbia, but in terms of the passing attack, I guess what has Matt Campbell kind of learned from it just from the previous years? Because even with Alan Bowman there, they've been struggling once they do play the Cyclones.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what was it, like 66-3 Campbell's first year? I think that was their only win, or that was one of two wins. I think they beat Kansas that year too. I think they really liked the matchup with Kingsbury, to be frank. You know, I think that they felt that they could out-scheme and out-coach that staff, frankly. And I don't know that that's the case with Matt Wells' group. So I do think it's different, but I do think, you know, in terms of the wide receivers and whichever quarterback is in there, you know, Iowa State does need to be concerned about getting beat over the top, because that's what happened against in really all three of their games. They've been beat over the top a number of times. And that is concerning when you have an experienced defense, where you have corners that are back, when you have a safety that's back. So that's really where I think Iowa State needs to clean things up and tighten things up defensively, is they've got to be able to contain the wide receivers and not let them get behind them.
Well, certainly it's kind of interesting when you kind of mentioned that 66-10 loss back in Jack Trice, because that was against some Super Bowl MVP named Patrick Mahomes. So certainly
Iowa State fans love to point that out.
Well, yeah.
It's one of their favorite things in the world, and I don't blame them.
Yeah, well, they certainly have plenty of things to talk about, as obviously Iowa State is at the top of the Big 12 standings in cruise control in terms of if they keep winning of going for a Big 12 conference title. But they have a opponent in Texas Tech that certainly could pose some problems. I guess just as a final thought here, as we talk to Travis Hines, who provides Iowa State updates for the Des Moines Register and Ames Tribune as well in Iowa, what are some matchups or what are some X factors or some things that you will watch for that kind of make you feel like, okay, Iowa State's either going to be in a good position to win here, or Texas Tech may be in a good position to win here on Saturday?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's two different levels of things that I'm looking at. One, you know, in terms of Iowa State winning the game, I think, you know, it's the things that we always talk about in you know, so many games. It's controlling the run, you know, being sound, not getting beat over the top, in the passing game, taking care of it offensively. You know, I think the talent gap when you have a fifth-year program that has Big 12 title aspirations and a second year program that's, you know, trying to ramp up, like Wells said, to where Iowa State is, the bigger question for me is, can Iowa State really make a statement about itself as a Big 12 title contender? Because if they win, you know, if it's by 1 point, they're still in the Big 12 title contention. Like, they win by one, I'm sure they'll be happy. But if they can win by 2 touchdowns, 3 touchdowns, and really dominate the game, I think that sends a message to the league that, you know, the space between Iowa State and the middle or lower half of the league is significant, which means they're right there at the top. And I think that will send a message, you know, to the league, to the within that locker room and to the fan base, that this team is for real, that they didn't beat an Oklahoma team that's, you know, just mediocre, you know, at least by Oklahoma standards. So, like, to me, that is the interesting thing. Obviously, number one is you got to win the game if you're Iowa State. But to me, that second layer of intrigue is, can they make a statement that, you know, they're head and shoulders above that middle of the league, that where they've been kind of mired the last 2 or 3 years. And that's what's kept them from making the leap from, you know, pretty good to that next level in the league.
Once again, that's Travis Hines. He provides Iowa State sports coverage for the Des Moines Register and the Ames Tribune. Gave us a little bit of insight on the Cyclones as they take on Texas Tech at Jack Trice Stadium, 2:30 p.m. Central Time on ABC Saturday. Appreciate the time, Travis, and we'll talk to you soon, man, when I head up to Ames.
Yeah, sounds great. Travel safe.
Once again, that's the Red Raider podcast. We appreciate you all listening. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple, iTunes, podcasts, and Spotify, and everything else. Up until then, we will talk to you next week.